Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. Today, we've got a really great guest. We've been trying to connect for a while. I have Dave Rogers from Dave's Guitar Shop out of La Crosse, Wisconsin. And you can find Dave online at davesguitar.com. He's got a really good story. He started in a small 400-square-foot space in a vacant dental office back in 1982. And he just had his 35th anniversary a few weeks ago. And he's now got 21,000 square foot retail store with over 2,500 guitars in stock. Dave's Guitar Shop's one of the largest independently owned guitar stores in the Midwest and is still growing. Dave's an authorized dealer of the following guitar lines: Tom Anderson, Fender, Gibson, PRS, Taylor, Suhr, Martin, Rickenbacker, Gretsch, G&L, Collings, and Lowesmore brands. Dave also sells enough volume so brands like Fender, PRS, and Taylor will make limited edition custom runs of 25 guitars each, and they did that for Dave's 25th anniversary back in 2007. Did you have something like that for the 35th?
For the 35th, we went with Paul Reed Smith. They did a wonderful guitar for us, and they're just starting to arrive now. So.
Awesome. Congratulations. They've been really active, PRS, in the marketing outreach, like over the last year, I've noticed.
Yeah, it's a golden season for those guys because Gibson's been kind of acting a little wacky lately. You know, they're doing a lot of crazy things down there, and so the market is kind of hungry for a humbucker guitar, I feel, and like Paul Reed Smith has been riding that wave, and they're taking the bull by the horns and just riding it, really. So
yeah, good for them. It doesn't seem, and on the forums, I know there's so much dissatisfaction with Gibson guitars in general, and it's just amazing how they don't address that. I don't really get that, but going on, the cool thing about Dave's Guitar Shop is that you can also check out Dave's personal collection, which must be awesome. We'll talk a little bit about that. His personal collection includes over 300.
It's over 500 now.
500 vintage guitars. You must have a really nice wife, or you must be divorced.
I was divorced twice, and I'm living with a nice lady now or whatever. But yeah, she's patient, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, man. 500 vintage guitars and 100 amps. Holy smokes. Yep. Yeah. Included in his collection are vintage custom color Fender Strats, Blackguard Tellies, Dot Neck Gibson 335s, and a 1959 Flame Top Gibson Les Paul, which has a current fair market value somewhere north of $300,000. Wow. Some of the people that have come into Dave's shop and played and purchase guitars are Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, of course, Joe Walsh from the Eagles, one of my favorite personalities and guitar players, actually, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, Rodney Crowell, Vince Gill, great player also, Michael Martin Murphy, Elliot Easton, Faith Hill, members of Pink Floyd, which I'd love to talk about, Kentucky Headhunters, Little Big Town, Everclear, Night Ranger, REO Speedwagon, and Def Leppard, and the Rolling Stones once bought an amp for Keith Richards at Dave's Guitar Shop, and in 2004 at the original Crossroads show in Dallas, a 1954 custom Gibson Les Paul was sold to Eric Clapton. This is interesting. Internet and telephone sales are making up 70% of your total sales, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Dave, I really, again, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you taking the time, and you know, hey, be yourself. Talk to me like you've known me for 10 years, and I'll do the same with you. So thank you again.
Oh, of course.
Hey, so let's start at the beginning. Where are you originally from and where did you grow up?
I grew up in Marshfield, Wisconsin, a small town in the center of the state of Wisconsin, and lived there until I was about 21.
And how did you initially get involved with guitars?
Well, my brother was a guitar player, my older brother, big influence in my life, and played in a great band, and I followed his band around and everything like that. And that definitely, you know, the hook was set then, you know. I mean, I love playing guitar. And you know, at that time, guitar was everything. I mean, there was a time of like Jimi Hendrix, Cream, the Allman Brothers. You know, it was like, you know, if you weren't a guitar player, you weren't anybody. And in school, you were either a jock or a musician, you know?
Yeah. That was bad. You don't have that anymore, man. Isn't that funny? That's non-existent, that whole, I guess, like I said, we're close in age, and it was the same when I was a kid. You're a jock or a musician.
Yep.
Okay, so you initially opened up a 400-square-foot shop. What was the genesis of that? How did that occur?
Well, I had worked at another music store here in town. You know, I was played in bands from the time high school was done, you know, through my early 20s. I was playing in bands for a living. And then I worked at a music store here in La Crosse. And the couple that owned it were retiring, so they're going out of business. And I went around and applied at all the other music stores in town. And, you know, there are stores that, you know, did like pianos and band instruments and stuff like that. So they'd ask me questions like, hey, what do you know about, you know, pianos, or what do you know about this and that? And I'm like going, hey, I'm a guitar player. All I know is guitars. And they're like going, get out of here, kid, you know. So so then I lived in a little mobile home, and I had a shed outside the mobile home, and so I set up a little repair shop, and I had a spray booth in that little shed, and I refinished guitars out there, and then I hung them up in the kitchen of my mobile home to cure. and I had one bedroom in the mobile home that was all guitars and like a little guitar space, and then, you know, in the other bedroom is where I slept. And so I did business out of there for a little while, and you know, I actually did kind of a cool little business. And I think it was the bass player in my band said, you know, hey, Dave, take your life seriously. You gotta rent a space. You're doing good here. You do your own shop, you know. And he talked me into it. I found a place that I think my first rent was like either $200 or $300 a month, you know. And I pulled the plug. I think it was July 1st, 1982.
That's awesome. And it sounds like organically this thing just took off. You know, I was going to ask you, what was there like an aha moment or a holy shit moment where you knew, hey, this is legit, this is real now? Was there a specific moment, or was it just like a slow burn but it was always growing?
Well, it is a little bit of both. I mean, the very first day I opened up, I think I took in $300.
Oh,
and that
wow.
was a holy shit moment for me, because
yeah.
I was like going, oh my God, this is, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire or whatever, you know, kind of laughingly. But, you know, I was always fine, you know, hey, if I can make enough to put Campbell's soup on the table and pay my lot rent for my trailer, I was fine. You know, I wasn't looking to make any money on any of this at all. It was just fun to me. But I mean, it did, you know, I mean, this area was a little bit underserved guitar-wise, and there's a lot of great guitar players around this area. And another big influence in my life was George Groen, and
oh, yeah.
I'd get these mailers from him all the time. And I'm like going, well, if he can send those mailers out from Nashville, I can find guitars here, and I can send those mailers out to people too, you know. So I started, you know, building up a mailing list that way, and did that for many, many years, and shipped a lot of guitars that way.
So let's talk about that, because I'm a marketing guy, and that's appealing. Where did you get – did you buy like a list of people that subscribe to Guitar World magazine or something? Where'd you find your list?
No, nothing like that. You know, what I'd do is I think starting in 88, I started going to the vintage guitar shows in Dallas and Arlington, Chicago. And I'd just put out a notebook saying, hey, sign up for a free stock list, you know. And and every month we'd type one out and send it out. And you know, for about 2 weeks after we sent out the list, business would be great. And then for about 2 weeks after that, it'd be slow, you know, because the list was kind of dead. So that's where it was at for a long, long time.
What's amazing is that most people don't realize that just doing an outreach like that to qualified customers is really going to pay off. You know?
Oh yeah,
that's great.
It sure did. Yeah.
Great that you, I had a question. You know, I'm not familiar with your part of the country at all. I've never been to Wisconsin, and I looked at a map, and La Crosse, at first blush, does not look like a big town. I mean, you're away from Milwaukee, Madison, which I think are the big ones. Like, how are you killing it up there in sort of like what appears to be a remote place?
Well, it is a remote place, and it's a beautiful area. You know, a river valley. We're right on the Mississippi River, kind of right where Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa meet.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like the middle of nowhere. And the advantage was, when I was doing business, when I started out, every dealership was available. You know, if you wanted, you know, Gibson, if you wanted Martin or whatever, there's no dealers around here. So if I'd have been in Milwaukee, Madison, the Twin Cities, couldn't have gotten any of those lines, you know. It would have been a struggle. So that was a bonus part of it. And plus, it's if you draw a circle around where we're at, I mean, the nearest big city is Madison. That's mm-hmm. two hours plus away. Minneapolis is about 3 hours away. And then you've got that big north eastern quarter of Iowa that's really underserved. So we have a really big circle that we can draw from.
Interesting. Interesting. So it turned out to be a good thing with the availability of dealerships.
It really was an advantage that way, yes. And, you know, another thing to think about here is real estate and the cost of living is much, much lower here than it would be in Chicago, Minneapolis, or whatever. So, you know, employees can work here for less than they could in a place like Chicago. We bought land here for very little money. We built the buildings, which, you know, that cost a lot. But, I mean, the cost of property and the taxes and everything like that, we couldn't have an operation this size in a big city.
No, for sure. I agree. You know, I spoke with, you know, Carter Vintage.
Sure. Walter and Christy, yeah, good friends.
Oh, it's funny. I spoke with them. I interviewed Walter, and they did the same thing. They bought the building down there. They were like one of my early interviews. And the same thing. They bought – and now, of course, you know, Nashville's exploding. So, you know. When you first started doing this – when you first opened your retail store, what was maybe a surprise or something you were not expecting, good, bad, or otherwise, that you were like, wow, I didn't know that?
I don't know if there was any surprises. I mean, at first, it was all kind of pleasant surprises, I would say, because, I mean, I actually, you know, was making – well, I didn't draw a paycheck for about the first 5 years. Every guitar that I bought – if I sold the guitar, I took every dime of that, put it back into inventory, kept building up the inventory. So for about 5 years, the money I made playing in a band paid my lot rent on my trailer and, you know, the meager living that I made. And so for 5 years, I just worked hard and stuck every dime back into the business. But I mean, yeah, there was, you know, absolutely tough times. I mean, I remember many a times the end of the month coming up and I wouldn't have money for the rent on the shop. So I'd call up a buddy of mine. I'd say, hey, I'll give you a great deal on it. You know, he collected Tweed Fender amps. I'd give you a great deal on a Tweed Deluxe if you can come down and help me pay my rent, you know. So
that's really – but what a great – you know, that's such a good work ethic to hear that. You know, people often think – and it's the same with musicians. They think, oh, the band's an overnight success, or, oh, your store is doing really well, but they don't understand the, you know, you went without for 5 years, you know, living in your mobile home, just squeaking by and reinvesting. And that took a lot of discipline and a great work ethic to do that. Of course, the payoff is later, but it's kind of hard to communicate sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, then again, at that time, you didn't know if there was going to be a payoff either, you know, but, you know, I just gave it my all. So,
what are some, you know, all of us in our careers, we all make some mistakes. And I was wondering if you could share any mistake that you made and a lesson you might have learned from that mistake over the last 35 years.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of times where we started like little branch stores that didn't go very well. I mean, that were definitely minuses, you know, when it comes down to it. And, you know, it was scary when we built the buildings that we built. You know, there's a big commitment. But again, you know, I learned from everything that we did. And, you know, there's guitars that we've bought that we thought we got a great deal on. And then, you know, you end up not being able to sell them or the market softens up on it. You know, you learn from everything. You know, there's hits and misses. Not everything's a home run.
Oh, for sure. In fact, funny you mentioned that the guitar, that was the same thing Walter said. I asked him that same question, and he said one time he bought a guitar, and it was an old Gibson. They thought it was like a home run, and then he missed it. It was a repaired headstock. So stuff like that happens to him as
well. Oh, sure.
Just part of the business, I guess.
Exactly. Yep, you learn from everything.
The flip side of that is there one or two things that you did which at the time were out of your comfort zone, but hindsight being 2020 turned into, you know, really good breakthroughs or really good opportunities for you?
Well, I remember back in the early days of the internet, you know, I didn't know what websites were or anything like that. I had a friend of mine that was real computer savvy, and he was familiar with the mailing list that we did, you know, and if anybody ever called for pictures, we'd take a picture with a Polaroid camera, mail it to him or whatever. And he said, what if I did something for you that if you got a guitar in 5 minutes later, somebody in Japan could see this guitar and see photos of it and buy it from you? What would you think of that? And I was like going, wow, I mean, that sounds kind of cool. You know, and I was skeptical, but I was like going, well, it's kind of cool. Tell me about this or whatever. And so he's telling me about it. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll set it up for you for no charge if I get 5% of every sale off of that.
Oh, wow.
From now until, you know, the end of time or whatever. And, you know, I right then and there, I was like going, well, I wouldn't do that, but tell me how much it would cost to set this up, you know.
Yeah.
So we negotiated a fee on that. And thank God I did that, because could you imagine giving them 5% of every sale off the internet ever, you know?
No, I cannot imagine that. That would be a nice royalty.
Yeah, no kidding.
You said that 70% of your business is from the internet. How do most people find you at this
point? Well, you know, that I'm not really sure of, you know, and actually the percentage now is probably more 80 to 85% off the internet. And, you know, being in a small town, it's so easy. And I'm not sure how it works with search engines and all that stuff. I'm not real familiar with that. There's some guys that work here that pay more attention than I do. But, you know, we'll do like full page ads and Vintage Guitar Magazine, Guitar Aficionado, Premier Guitar, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we'll always mention our website in there. We'll do ads for different things we're doing. And I think once somebody sees our website, you know, they save it and come back to it, check it. You know, we update our website constantly every day. So our inventory is really up to date, and we're getting cool guitars in every day. So, I mean, there's people that sit and watch the website. I mean, there's even other dealers that I know when we list a vintage guitar, I mean, within 5 minutes afterwards, these guys are calling us up, you know, trying to buy these guitars.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you what percentage of your business would you say is vintage versus new?
Well, vintage is a small part of the business anymore. You know, you can't go out and buy 50, you know, 59 Les Pauls and, you know, have them out for sale or old Strats or whatever. So, I mean, I would say vintage is probably 10% of our business at best.
Okay.
Just because, you know, it's the accessibility of it all. And I'd say used American guitars is probably 30 to 40%, I would say, of the business. And then everything after that is new.
Interesting. And I got to ask this question. And if you can't say it, I totally understand. I had a question. Which guitars get returned most often?
That's an easy one to answer. And, you know, sad to say, but it's Gibson. You know,
really?
Quality control issues, you know. And some people have unreal expectations, or they'll go like, oh, you know, this 59 Les Paul just didn't sound like Dwayne Allman's. And, you know, you know, it wouldn't be because you're not Dwayne Allman. You know what I mean?
Do people actually say that?
Oh, yeah. We've had guys say, well, you know, I expected to sound just like Eric Clapton from the Beano era or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So you go, okay, you know, no problem. And we have a no questions asked return policy. But you know, for finishing and stuff like that, you know, Paul Reed Smith, Tom Anderson, Collins, you know, phenomenal guitars. You know, you could look at those with a microscope and not have an issue. Gibson, yeah, not so much, you know.
Yeah.
And again, I'm a huge Gibson fan, love their guitars. But I mean, you know, when you ask that question, that's a very easy one to answer.
You know, I have a Tom Anderson guitar. It's the only custom guitar really I've played. I haven't played a Sur. But my God, it's almost like cheating.
Yeah, they build something so good. It's like, you know, that burns a candle so bright that it's hard for other manufacturers to touch it, you know?
It really is. And I love my Gibsons, and I have a couple of Strats I love. But that, it's just, you know, It really is magic. It's phenomenal. So when a lot of times guitarists come into your shop and they're looking for stuff, are there things that a lot of guys are looking for that in reality don't matter?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, it's all about the look, or like on a Les Paul, a figured top or whatever. You know, I'll be the first one to say that I think guitars are art. You know, I mean, yes. I can, you know, I could line my whole wall with guitars and never look at anything else. I mean, that's fine for me. I don't need a TV. I don't need scenery outside my window or whatever. I mean, guitars are all I need. And, you know, I understand that. But, I mean, you see guys like, you know, more interest in the cosmetics than the playability, the sound, you know. You talk to these guys that are sending guitars back because, you know, the flame top didn't look as good as it did in the photos or whatever. And, you know, then you could say, well, did you play the guitar? How did it sound? You know, did you like the sustain? You know, those things don't matter to some people, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, I find that amazing that somebody would actually send a guitar back saying they didn't sound like X, you know, person. That's, like, bizarre.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that. It's funny. It's not, I wouldn't say it's common, but we've had it happen. And, you know, we all just kind of chuckle and say, okay, yeah, send the guitar back. No problem. You know, what do you say? But, you know, so much is in the player's hands or, you know, and a lot of these guys would sound phenomenal using the worst gear. You know what I mean? So.
Yes. I mean, what I just find it, I mean, I shouldn't because I know people, but they're finding the blame for that on the instrument.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
What's weird. Like, okay. You've been involved with like loads of really cool, actual real players, real celebrity players. Can you talk about some of those? Like, what were the situations? For example, like I had here Joe Walsh.
Well, you know, and some of those situations, I mean, the guitars weren't actually in the store. Like with Joe Walsh, I know he needed a double neck, a white double neck when he was performing in Las Vegas one time. So we had to overnight that to him, but he wasn't actually in the shop. But I mean, most of the names you mentioned were actually in the shop, but you know, most of the time you're not directly dealing with a musician on the really big guys, like, with the Stones, you know, we were dealing with Pierre, the guitar tech on, with Eric Clapton, is mostly with Lee Dixon, but we did, you know, face to face with Clapton a few times, and we've sold him many guitars since that first one. And go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You finish.
Well, yeah, and so I mean, we've developed some very, very nice relationships, and some of these guys are just the warmest, nicest people. You know, like Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters. You know, you could never find a nicer guy than that.
Interesting. Did you deal with Gilmore?
No, I did not. We supplied him an old National resonator guitar, a square neck, which surprised me, but I never actually dealt directly with him, always the guitar tech.
He's like my favorite guitarist ever. I just think he's such an economical – he says so much with so little, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, very, very much so.
Whereas there's a lot of guys – and it's like a, you know, ice cream. It's a personal taste, but that say – that's, you know – spit out tons of notes, but to me, I just don't hear anything that they're saying, you know?
Sure.
What would you say if you had to reminisce and wax nostalgic, what would be the nicest guitar you've ever had in your shop from the sweetest sounding or just the thing that you picked up that like, my God, this is the Holy Grail?
Well, I mean, Burse. I mean, you know, the 59 Les Pauls. I mean, I think we did a count recently and I think we've had 10 through here.
Wow.
And I wish I could have afforded to keep them all. And unfortunately, I've got two right now. But, you know, again, those growing up when I did, you know, Eric Clapton playing with Cream and the Blues Breakers or whatever, and Dwayne Allman, Dickie Betts, all that stuff, you know, I was always about the 59 Burst. So that's, to me, the Holy Grail.
That's the Holy Grail. In your personal collection of 500 and that, you know, gosh, it could be 510 by next week, considering the rate, the inflation since the time I read your website. What are your top three guitars, would you say?
Top three? Well, I would probably grab a Burst. I'd grab a Blonde Dot Neck 335, and probably I've got a green 57 Maple Neck Strat.
Okay, so why the Blonde Dot Neck as opposed to a you know, the Cherry? Or the one.
Well, you know, the blonde ones are the rarest. You know, if you have a blonde dot neck, I mean, that adds thousands and thousands of dollars to the value. And I'm lucky enough to have two blonde dot necks. And I mean, that you just do not see those guitars.
Is there any guitar that you let go of that you wish you hadn't, that you're still like, if I see it again, I'm going to grab it right away?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a super clean 55 Strat I had one time that I sold that I wish I'd have back. And any of the 8 Bursts that I've sold that I don't have anymore, if I ever had a chance to get any of those back, I sure would.
You had mentioned that Gibson get a lot of returns. What the flip side of that, what would be like the most underrated guitar?
The most underrated guitar?
Yeah, that a guitar that's not, you know, should be much more well known and much more played and have higher conversations about it, but that's not.
Boy, that's interesting. You know, I would have to think about that. I don't even know, because I mean, there's so many unsung small builders out there right now that build great guitars. I mean, we're in a renaissance period for that kind of stuff, and I'm sure there's a million of them out there, but nothing's coming to mind off the top of my head anyway.
How about amps? You know, what would you say are the most over and underrated amps in your opinion?
Well, I'm a Fender amp guy. I mean, to me, nobody else ever had to build amps. You know, if you had a Fender amp, you had perfection. And you know, Marshall is a little bit that way, or they were a little bit that way. But you know, there's so many boutique builders out there. I mean, I'm a big fan of the old Matchless amps. Mm-hmm. Dr. Z is a great amp right now.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, there's so many boutique builder amps too, and it seems like it's kind of like the guitar players seem so fickle that, you know, whatever's hot right now, next quarter is going to be a dead issue, and you can't give them away. So I don't know. I don't keep real up on the amp market like I should.
And do most of these boutique guys sell through you, or are they only direct, or?
Well, so there's some that are direct and some sell through us, you know, and there's just so many builders out there. I know there's a couple of stores now that just seem like they specialize in boutique amps. That's a business that I shy away from a little bit, because it's expensive to ship amps and scary to ship amps, because there's a lot of damage that happens with that.
Mm.
And we're basically, you know, we have a great storefront and a great showroom and everything like that, but the majority of our business is mail order, and shipping amps is a whole nother business, I think.
And I agree with you that I had to ship an amp once, and it was like I prayed that it would not. And I followed all the instructions, but nevertheless, you know, you're shipping tubes, and it was real scary.
Yep, it's fragile stuff.
What is something that most guitarists should be aware of when they're choosing a guitar that they really don't pay as much attention to as they should?
Well, like I said, guitar players are a fickle bunch, and it seems like now more than ever, guys buy guitars, keep them for 6 months, flip them, you know, get something different, or they'll fall in love with something else or whatever. So, I mean, to me, if I ever have somebody asking me, like, personally, hey, Dave, what should I look at when I'm buying a guitar? I'll go, like, hey, if you buy a used American, say, Les Paul, Strat, Paul Reed Smith, anything like that, if you get a used one for a decent deal, likely that you'll get your money out of it, go resell it or trade it in again. But if you buy a new one, you're going to take that hit, just like buying a new car, you know, driving off the lot, you know, you're going to lose thousands of dollars. So, I mean, but then I'll say to a guy who buys one guitar every 20 years or whatever, you know, that's not such a situation. This guy not thinking about what it's going to be worth when he sells it. He wants the guitar that he's going to buy and play for the next 20, 30 years or whatever. Then that's not such an issue. But there's a lot of guys that, I mean, they'll keep a guitar 2-3 months and trade it in, flip it off or whatever. And some of these guys, I try to like almost caution them about what they should buy, you know?
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. I know me, I don't collect stuff. I like to use what I have, and I've had a couple of guitars I've sold quick only because they were, you know, disappointing.
Sure.
And they didn't work out as well as I thought they would. But yeah, I think that's a pretty common thing. People, in fact, I've gone on Craigslist and looked at guitars, and I'll go meet the person at their house, and they'll say, yeah, you know, I had this a few months ago. I'm just flipping it and looking to get something else. It's almost like a, I don't want to say addiction, but like a compulsion.
Yeah, like a compulsive trader or whatever. And, you know, it's all good, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, we're very, you know, trade friendly. We love doing bartering and trading and all that stuff. But I mean, sometimes you just feel bad for a guy who bought a new Les Paul or a new Paul Reed Smith, and you know, a month later he comes in and wants to trade it in or whatever. You take a pretty big hit that way.
Oh yeah, but you know what? At a certain point in time, you got to sit back and say, "Hey, man, this isn't my first rodeo. Why do I keep doing this?" You know, some people have more money than sense, so that's just the way it is. Let me ask you, if you weren't doing what you're doing now, this is a hard question for you because you've been doing this so long and you've been doing it so well at it. What do you think you'd be doing instead?
Well, my second career choice, my backup career was ditch digging, I think. So I'm much happier doing what I'm doing.
Yeah,
so.
I bet, man. I totally bet. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love scuba diving. I do that a couple times a year.
Holy shit. Not out there where you live, do you?
Oh, well, you know, we have, and it's not fun around here. But yeah, you usually go to like Nassau, Bahamas, or Cayman Islands, or Cozumel, Mexico. You know, ocean diving is just wonderful. So I love that. Downhill ski, play guitar in a band. You know, that's kind of my main things, I guess. So
very cool. What's the favorite part of your job?
You know, I kind of love it all. I mean, well, I guess the favorite part of it is that, you know, when people call you up and they go, "Hey, I heard you'd be interested in this guitar. This was my dad's guitar." I mean, it just happened. In fact, this week we had a lady call me up and she said, "Well, I have got two guitars. I took them in for an appraisal at this place. That place said that you'd be interested in buying them. These guitars belong to my dad. You know, they were treasured, but, you know, we don't play and whatever." So, yeah, I've got a guy up in the Minneapolis area today picking up a 1956 Gretsch 6120 and a 66 Jazzmaster. And, you know, highly sought after stuff. And, I mean, that gets my blood flowing probably more than anything in the business anymore. The guys tease me. They said the only reason I've got the guitar shop is so I can get all the cool guitars that come in here, you know.
But what's wrong with that?
yeah, and what's wrong with that? You know, so I get first choice in everything that hits the door or whatever. But so, I mean, that is always a nice surprise. But we get calls like that quite often where people have and, you know, we're seeing it more and more as the baby boomers that seem to be the generation that really collected this stuff are, you know, either aging out or dying off. And we're seeing some pretty cool stuff come out of the woodwork.
That's awesome. Is there a least favorite part?
Is there a what? I'm sorry?
A least favorite part of your job?
Oh, you know, all the, you know, and I hire people to kind of take care of that, you know, like people that have to deal with the insurance people or, you know, payroll, budgeting. You know, I'm not a businessman at all. I'm a guitar player, you know, so I hate all of that stuff. So, I have great bookkeepers, accountants, and all that stuff that kind of handle all that stuff so I don't have to even think about it, you know.
That's great, man. You're doing what you like and you're subbing out the stuff you don't like. Honestly, man, it sounds like a pretty good arrangement. Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
You know, business wise, you know, I would say I've tried to emulate George Gruen. I mean, he was always kind of like, you know, a guitar dealer hero of mine. You know, as far as guitar players that influenced me, you know, Eric Clapton, Carlos Santana, Robert Cray. My brother got me started playing guitar. He was a big influence in my life. My parents died when I was very, very young, so you don't have too much memories of them at all. But yeah, I'd say that kind of covers it. But George Gruen, I always thought, you know, he's a little cold and calculating, but, you know, I always just kind of dug what he was doing. You know, he was doing it before anybody else, as far as I'm concerned, you know?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I don't know him, and I have no axe to grind with him or anybody else. But I went into Gruen's store in Nashville. And Nashville, as you probably know, is one of the warmest, most welcoming places that you can go. At least that was my experience.
Uh-huh.
I was out of there in 5 minutes. It was it was an awful experience. It really was. And it was really disappointing because it was, you know, I just got the sense that, first of all, anything interesting was upstairs, not downstairs. And
they wouldn't let you up there unless you were somebody.
Yeah. And it's just like not one person said hello. I mean, as opposed to I went into Carter Vintage. It was literally the best experience I ever had.
Yeah, those guys are so nice. Well, and I don't know if you knew this, but Christy was his business manager for, I think, 25 years.
He did mention that. Yeah, yeah. And he, yes, he told me the story. I mean, it's a great story, but I mean, That's why I wanted to interview him, because I had such a great experience in the store, and I'm not.
And those guys, you know, those guys down there. I mean, I've been down at their store, and you know, it's like closing time, and you know, most stores, you know, they're booting your ass out the door or whatever, and they're like going, "Hey, it's happy hour. You know, you want a beer? We're gonna just hang out with the employees for a while and just chill or whatever." You know, I mean, and they're just the nicest people, and you know, they even work, you know, Sundays. They don't take days off or anything like that, and you know, more power to them. That's great. They were everything that was good about George's store. And I mean, I still love George's store, but I know what you're saying about the attitude at George's. It's a little bit like, you know, if you're not somebody, you know, we're not going to give you the time of day a little bit, you know.
But literally not give you any time at all. I mean, I'd rather tell me to go to hell, get out of the store.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather, you know, be straight up with it. It was just.
And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, you had 5 minutes in there and, you know, you'd never be interested in going back in there again. You got never. A bad vibe about it or whatever. And, you know, how many customers get that, you know? So, I mean, we try to be, you know, more like the Walter and Christie attitude here, you know, it, more warm and fuzzy. But I don't think there's anybody more warm and fuzzy than those two. I love those guys.
Yeah, I was like just blown away. They were like, "Oh, come in, you know, just take your time. Look, let me know if you can I help you or if you need anything." Or, and then when I found a couple of guitars, "Oh, what kind of amps you want to try? Hey, why don't you go in this room? And if it doesn't work out, you know, there's another amp room here. Just let me know. We'll make it comfortable." I was like, "Holy crap!" I felt guilty for not buying a guitar when I.
Oh, and you know, look at how their business has exploded because of how nice they are. You know, and they deserve every bit of it. So.
Yeah, they're very, very, very cool people. What's the most important lesson your business has taught you?
I would say, you know, honesty is the best policy. I mean, there's never a time where, you know, we've misrepresented a guitar or sold something that we tried to convince somebody that it was something that it wasn't or anything like that. And, you know, so people, you know, have learned to trust us over the years. You know, they'll trust us with selling their vintage guitars. They'll trust us with, you know, knowing that, you know, we know guitars well enough that we wouldn't sell anything that wasn't 100% right. Or if it was, you know, any changes on it, we'd sure tell everybody about it. You know, and I sleep great at night because of that. You know, I mean, I don't feel like I've ever steered anybody wrong in anything we've done here. So
that's awesome. I'm going to ask you one last question and then we can wrap up. What's the best business advice you've ever been given, or any advice you've ever been given, and who gave it to you?
Business advice. That's a good question. I mean, there's been a lot of different people that have given advice, and you know, I just kind of take it all with a grain of salt. Or I'll, you know, like I'm a very moralistic person, so I'll always get morals involved or whatever. If somebody comes in with a 57 Strat and they said, "I want $150 for it," I'd pull out a book and I'd say, "Hey, this guitar is a $25,000 guitar. Let's be reasonable. You know, we can pay you $15,000. You know, we've had situations like that that's happened.
Wow.
And I don't think that's good business. I don't think that's. But that's just the way we've always done it, and we feel good about ourselves for doing it that way.
Well, I think it gets back to what you said a minute ago. You could sleep at night, and I don't know if you could do too many of those transactions and give the guy $150 at a certain. I mean, I know I couldn't. At a certain point in time, it's like you can't sleep at night.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, you'd be a wealthier man, but that money is ill-gotten gains. I think, you know.
Yeah. At what price?
Yeah.
You know, wealth is only. You know, if you're getting wealthy and you don't feel good about the money, it's not really a good. It's not really wealth.
Yeah, a friend of mine put it best when he said, "Yeah, I've never seen a trailer hitch on a coffin where you could haul a trailer full of goods back, you know, with you to the grave." You know, so
yeah, man, 100%. I agree with that. You know, it's about making memories, not getting things. That's what I think. And it sounds like you're doing a great job. Hey, listen, Dave, I cannot thank you enough. You're just a very classy guy, man. You're just a real sweet gentleman, and I appreciate everything. And if you are not familiar with Dave's Guitar Shop, go and check him out online at Dave's Guitar, DAVES guitar.com, or he's got a Facebook page at facebook.com/ Dave's Guitar Shop. I would invite you to give him a call. That's what I did. He's a very nice guy. I've spoken to a couple of people on his staff, real genuine, real nice people. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Again, thanks so much to Dave Rogers for spending his time with us. I really appreciate it, Dave. You're awesome. And, anybody, you could sign up and get notified of future episodes on our website at everyonelovesguitar.com. Now go play your guitar and have some fun. Until next time, I'm out. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.